It says, then he took his staff in his hand and chose five smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. And the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistines looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." So last week we looked at David's conversation with Saul that happened in Saul's tent in the war camp. David had been going around the camp talking to different folks, trying to figure out why nobody is willing to fight Goliath. Because for David, Goliath's insults and all his nasty talk was enough. This Philistine dared to abuse God's army with his words and with his threats. And when David found out about all those bonus prizes that Saul was offering up to the man who would kill Goliath, he really wanted to know why no one was lining up to fight Goliath, because he didn't understand how the army of the living God, which is how he saw these men, how they could be afraid of any hostile army, let alone one man. A very large, ill-tempered man, but one man nonetheless. And when David tells Saul that he will go and fight Goliath, Saul thinks he's crazy. Saul even told him, "David, you are just a boy. Goliath has been a war fighter his entire life. He is a killer. You do not want to fight him, David." But for David, it was never him versus Goliath, right? It was the God of Israel versus the enemies of Israel. David saw this battle, this single combat with Goliath, as the means to which Jehovah would give victory to his people. David was just the conduit that victory would come through. He told Saul in verse 37, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And remember, where 37 reads "the Lord," the Hebrew actually reads Jehovah. It's God's personal name. You see, David knew where his help came from. Many years after this, he would write a poem that we call Psalm 121, which reads, "I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth." For David, this fight with Goliath was personal because his God was personal. David knew him by name, but more importantly, he knew David by name. David had his heart. David saw with his eyes. David was his chosen king. And now in this valley, David's heart is full. His focus is on his front sight. So he looks at Saul as if to say, "Don't ever tell me the odds. I'm going to go kill a giant." And I believe Saul was genuinely concerned for David's well-being, but he was more relieved that it wasn't him fighting Goliath, you know? So he sends David out to the battle line. He tells him, "Go, and the Lord be with you." You gotta love those spiritual cliches, don't you? You know, years ago, somebody coined the term Christianese. Have you ever heard of that? It's defined a bunch of different ways, but basically it's a term that describes the lingo or the jargon that us church folk use when we communicate with each other. It's a language that people outside the church don't understand. But it's not just seen as like a different vernacular. It's kind of sneaky. It's a way we can say things without saying things. It lets us sound faithful and holy without actually being faithful and holy. I'll give you some examples. We tell each other the Lord works in mysterious ways. And what that really means is I don't have a clue what's going on, and I don't have any idea what to tell you. Another one is, I'll put you on my prayer list. Translation, there's a very small chance I'm actually going to remember this conversation when I leave here. Right? How about this one? Well, I'm not sure that's my spiritual gift. In other words, you need to find somebody else. Pastor, you've heard all these over the years. How about this one? How can I pray for you specifically? In other words, tell me all the details so I can go tell everybody else your business. One more. We're going to have a fellowship after church. Translation, we are going to eat so much that our ears get warm and our pants don't fit anymore. This is my favorite one. In closing, which really means I got about another hour to go. So y'all get comfy. But y'all, Saul's parting words to David, I think, could qualify for Christianese. The Lord be with you, because I won't be. Saul's not leaving the tent. If David wants to go, he's going to let him go. But I really do think that Saul cares about David, just not as much as he cares about himself. And I don't want to bang on him too hard, because this is part of being human, right? We can have genuine affection for other people and at the same time be so self-focused that we'll allow that person we care about to face hardships alone just so we don't get hurt in the process. We all do this. Now, there's levels to it. You know, most people will choose to suffer for their children but not for casual friends. It doesn't mean they don't care about their friends. It just means there's this line they're willing to cross for their kids that they're not going to do for anybody else. I think we're all like that to some degree. So to assume that Saul doesn't care what happens to David, to me, isn't really fair. I don't think that's right. I think Saul's complicated, just like we are. But enough of that. Let's talk about the battle. I'm going to read verse 40 again. It says, "Then he took his staff in his hand and chose five smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine." Now, I've got some pictures of a staff in the sling. That's the staff. Now, the staff probably would have been about 5 foot long, maybe a little longer. And when we think of a shepherd's staff, that's what we imagine, right? It's got that little crook on the end. And that crook is for grabbing the sheep by the leg or by the neck, trying to pull it to safety or trying to keep it still. But it's a really small opening. It's made for a sheep. It doesn't work for cattle. It doesn't work for dogs. So if you see a man carrying a staff like that, you were pretty confident he was a shepherd. Now, the sling was really cool. Now, this wasn't a slingshot. It was this was actually a weapon of war in this period of time. This is the Iron Age. The way this sling works is basically it extends the arm of the thrower. So as a reference, think about a baseball pitcher, okay? This is pretty wild. Did y'all know the average 14 to 15-year-old baseball pitcher has a fastball of around 65 miles per hour? That's more than I could do. And according to a former major league pitcher, if a kid that age wanted to start for a really good JV high school team, he would actually need to get that up to about 75 miles per hour. Now, college players, they're throwing 80 to 95 miles per hour. Okay, and that's just the arm. That's just the arm. If the thrower was using a sling as long as his arm, so for me that'd be about 3 feet or so, the speed of that projectile doubles. It literally doubles. And David at this time, he's older than 14, 15. He's probably closer to 18, 19. He might maybe even 20. So he's strong. He's fit. And since he practices with this sling regularly, because he has to, I mean, he uses it for protection, he also probably hunts with it, there's no reason to doubt that he could launch a stone at around 200, 220 miles per hour. That just sounds crazy to me, but that's what the experts agree on. If we put that in ballistic terms, that's close to 300 feet per second. That's faster than most high-speed rail trains. with a handheld sling and a rock. That's crazy. Now, this is even better. David could have used a staff sling. I got a picture of that. Yeah, propped up on some firewood. Because, you know, the text does say he approached Goliath with his staff in his hand, right? It does say that. So a staff sling looked a lot like a handheld sling, but one end of the cord was tied to the staff permanently, and the other end was tied in a loop, and that loop fit over the top of the staff, and it kind of sat down on that first cord. And to throw it, you'd use a motion similar to like a lacrosse ball with that little racket thingy they use, whatever that thing's called. It's kind of like that. And when the top of that staff hit a certain angle, the loop of that second cord would slip off, and then that projectile would fly out of the cradle. Now, the big advantage to these staff slings like this is you could launch much larger stones with the same amount of effort. Of course, they wouldn't go as fast or they wouldn't go as far as a handheld sling, but if you're in close enough range, like David and Goliath were, and you hit somebody with a softball-sized stone from that bad boy, that's a wrap. There's no getting up from that. These staff slings are what actually led to catapults and trebuchets and all those cool little medieval weapons that you see on like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. It started with these. They ended up getting bigger and bigger. They take two men to throw them, three men to throw them. Then finally they were self-sustaining and just monsters. But y'all, whichever weapon of war that David used to kill Goliath, one thing remains the same. He killed Goliath, okay? This isn't a fictional story. This is a historical event because that's what the text says. Let's read that text again because it's awesome. I'm going to start in verse 41. And the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. Okay, that's his armor bearer. Remember, we talked about that a few weeks ago, how David became that for Saul. Verse 42, and when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. So Goliath thinks they sent a pretty boy after him, and it makes him mad. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. Again, David's perspective just keeps showing up in the text. This is something that the writer really wants us to see, y'all, that David's focus is not on the size and the skill of Goliath. It's on the might and the power of his God. That's where David's attention is. That's what he's relying on. And David wants everybody in that valley to know that Jehovah does not need armies or great weapons of war to rout his enemies. He doesn't need a certain number of soldiers. He doesn't need a better battle plan. If he shows up, he wins, period. That's all it takes. And Jehovah is there in the Elah Valley because his spirit lives inside his servant David, just like he lives inside everyone who follows his son Jesus. He's always there. Our God doesn't need size, he doesn't need strength, he doesn't need weapons or strategies. Faithful followers with trusting hearts suit him just fine. That suits him just fine. You know, this fight between David and Goliath was really over back in verse 40, where the writer says that David approached the Philistine. That's genuine faith. Anyone can talk big, right? Anyone can learn church vocabulary, secret handshakes, whatever. But when that giant is staring you down and you walk toward him, you don't run away from him. You walk toward him in faith. That's real faith. That is real, genuine faith. And David's words earlier might have been bold, but his faith was bolder, a lot bolder. Let's keep reading. Look at verse 48. When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag, and he took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. You know, David told Goliath back in verse 45 that he did not need a sword and he did not need a spear because Jehovah, David's God, who he knew personally and trusted completely, would give Goliath into his hand. That's what he told him. And that's exactly what happened. That is exactly what happened. Y'all, for me, this story is the perfect illustration of the Christian life. David's approach to life is very simple, but it's not easy. Don't confuse those two. It is not easy. David trusts God so much that to a lot of people around him, he probably comes off as a little cocky, maybe a little reckless. I mean, let's imagine this is now, okay? Let's say we got a bunch of big, rough-looking dudes with baseball bats, right? And they walk up on a church group camping in a state park. It could happen. Let's say they start yelling, they start making threats, they start saying these horrible things that young folks just should not hear, and one of them wants to fight. We'll call him Mr. Bully. And Mr. Bully starts to single people out. He starts calling them names, he starts threatening them, he even starts pushing them around a little bit. Little kids are crying, the moms and dads are scared to death, and there's one kid who doesn't even go to that church, right? He's just there with his cousin because his mom made him. He tells this gang of thugs, that's enough. You boys just need to ease on now. Well, Mr. Bully says, what'd you say? And the kid says, you heard me. Walk away. You need to walk away. So Mr. Bully starts walking toward the kid. And to his surprise, the kid starts walking toward Mr. Bully. Mr. Bully smiles. He likes this. He raises his bat, he takes a swing at the kid, kid sidesteps, punches Mr. Bully square in the side of the head, knocks him out cold. Now, Mr. Bully's buddies, those thugs, they freak out, they grab him, and they run away. Now, when the kid first starts to escalate things with Mr. Bully, the folks in the church group think he's crazy. They're even mad at him for doing so. Like, why are you even here? You don't even go to our church. You're going to get us all killed. But after he makes all the bad guys run away, he's their hero. They love him. He's great. Same thing happening here in this valley with David and Goliath. It's the same thing. The folks are thinking, David must have a death wish wanting to fight this monster. We're all going to end up serving the Philistines for the rest of our lives. Why is David even here? He's not even in the army. Well, one dead giant later, they're putting David up on their shoulders and screaming his praises. So what's your point, Mike? Here's my point. Being used by God carries risk. Always. And because of that, there will always be people trying to talk you out of it. And sometimes their motivations are very well intended. For example, you have a friend or a family member who is not following Jesus, who just can't understand why you would take a chance like that. Why you would give up all of these other things so you can do that. That's how Saul was with David earlier in the tent. Other times, people's intentions are petty and they're self-serving. That was David's brother Eliab and those losers who ran to Saul when they heard David asking questions. But either way, when we attempt something big for Jesus, there's a good chance we're going to get pushback from somebody. And sometimes that somebody is us. We'll sabotage ourselves. We don't need help a lot of times. We will talk ourselves out of obeying Jesus and doing what He has told us to do. Because it's either inconvenient, or it's expensive, or maybe it makes us uncomfortable. Those are really, I think, the three big ones, because let's be honest, most of us are never going to be in a life and death situation like David was here in this valley. Could be, but not likely. And I think that might be why the story's told the way it is, because most people never go this far. But if God's able to use this young man, David, in these circumstances, against this powerful an enemy, then whatever he wants me to do, that's an easy day. Really. That's an easy day. I just need to be faithful and trust him through it, just like David did. It's the same mechanism. You know, I really think that we all want to see God do big, amazing things, but most of us are not willing to approach the Philistine. We're just not. We want someone else to do that. We want someone else to feed those hungry people. We want someone else to share the gospel story with our neighbor. We want someone else to lead that ministry or get involved with that ministry. Whereas David, because he has God's heart, he sees a great need, and he moves to meet that great need. Israel was lost and needed a champion. So David approached the Philistine. Just like all of us were lost and needed a Savior, so Jesus walked to the cross. There is no compulsion here. Nobody's making David fight a dude twice his size. They're actually trying to talk him out of it. The Father didn't need to force Jesus to go to the cross. His closest friends actually tried to talk him out of it. But David and Jesus had the Father's heart. David and Jesus saw life through the Father's eyes. And when David saw his people's great need, he trusted the Father. He trusted him to glorify himself through David's obedience. And that's exactly what happened. And when Jesus saw everyone's greatest need, he trusted his Father's plan to glorify him through his obedience. And again, that's exactly what happened. And this expectation for followers of Jesus has never changed. It's like our brother Tim said, we can have temporal success or we can have eternal significance. And we don't always have to choose one or the other, but as followers of Jesus, we are compelled to consider one more valuable than the other. For followers of Jesus, significance through obedience must overrule success through worldly means. So I want to encourage all of us to take some time to find your fight. Find your fight. Not a fight you can win on your own. There's no glory in him with that, for him in that. But find a fight with a giant. Find a cause or an issue, find a family or an individual who will cost you time, will cost you resources and energy, and then commit your battle to the Lord, expecting him to bring down that giant. Because that's what he does. And we need to be prepared to fill whatever role in that he wants us to play. Now, next week, we're going to look at the beginning of the most meaningful relationship in David's life, I think. It's not with Saul. It's with Saul's son. There's some very interesting dynamics going on there, but that, we'll get into that next week. But for now, I don't know why this has felt so important to me this week. We're going to sing, right? We got one more. We're going to sing. And typically, our last song is kind of meant to be reflective and thoughtful. It's something to help us consider the higher things, you know. Well, this song we're about to sing, it's not really like that. Because sometimes I think we need to stop contemplating and just start celebrating. Celebrating our great God, celebrating the fact that our God is a giant killer. Do we believe that? He can overcome anyone, anything, any situation. He is greater than our sin. He's greater than our circumstances. And I don't know, for some reason, and if y'all know me, this is really out of character for me, but I really think we just need to sing loudly to Him today. Sing praises to Him. Enjoy Him. Enjoy what He has given us. Okay? Now, I'm not even going to pray. Let's just sing, okay? Mitch, turn this one up.